welcome to this week's edition of the Video News Endscreen Media Podcast, our first of 2019. And Colin Dixon joins me as always. Happy New Year, Colin. How you doing?
Happy New Year, Will, and Happy New Year to all of our listeners. I, as you can hear, I started the year with a stinking cold, but we were going to soldier on, and we have our first topic for the year already, right?
We do. It didn't take long. We're recording here on Thursday afternoon, and yesterday Roku announced that they are expanding the mission of the Roku channel to include premium subscriptions, and you are going to give us some of the details, and then we're going to broaden the discussion what it means for the industry as a whole.
That's right, and this is something that I'm sure our listeners will already be familiar with, because of course Amazon has been doing that with its channels program for quite some time. There are some interesting wrinkles, though, with the way Roku is going about it. They are selling subscriptions to partner SVOD services, but they're doing it through the Roku channel, which is, of course, their free-to-web, ad-supported part of the Roku experience. And this has done phenomenally well since they released it early last year. It's now sort of rocketed to the number five spot, and I expect we'll hear more in the next quarterly results that it's doing even better than that. And what they're basically allowing people to do now in that experience is they can find a bunch of subscription VOD services, they can browse the entire catalog, they can sign up for a free trial. All of the providers have agreed to provide free trials. And they can sign up with just one click. The billing will be taken care of by Roku. And it's that easy to manage the subscriptions. You can just go to your Roku account and, I guess, cancel the subscriptions that you don't want anymore, or adjust them as you deem appropriate. They've already got a pretty good stable of services that have said they're going to come along. For example, Showtime, Stars, Epix, and Curiosity Stream, among many others, have said that they will be there when it launches. However, I will say you won't find Netflix, Hulu, and HBO there now yet. Although one would maybe expect HBO Now would probably be the first one of that group to sort of jump in if they see it as valuable. So I think this is, to me, Will, this is like a good deal for everybody, really. It's certainly a good deal for Roku. Roku, as we've talked about on the podcast, has been moving rapidly away from hardware sales towards what it calls its platform business, which includes ad sales and service business. And of course, this really helps both of those, right? Because first of all, they're going to get some, they must be being paid somehow by the SVOD providers for the support they're providing in billing, promotion, and marketing services through the platform. This also is going to help them, I think, with one of the biggest holes that they have in their strategy, which is they really don't have a multi-screen strategy. And part of this announcement is that they're going to launch the Roku channel on connected devices, and you will be able to access the subscriptions that you sign up for through the Roku channel, through this app, on all of your connected devices. So it helps solve that for them. The other thing about it, of course, is that there's more reasons for you to be in the Roku channel. So if you're there more, you're going to be watching more ads. So that's good for them. And for the Roku, for SVOD providers, well, first off, if you're part of Amazon Channels, then you should probably look very closely at the Roku channel, because, assuming that the business terms are pretty much the same, it's a very similar model. And you could argue that Roku could actually do better than Amazon in selling to its 24 million active users, because people spend so long using the Roku box. The company tells us that people are spending nearly 3 hours a day streaming content, versus I've seen some data from Comscore that says people only spend about 11 hours a month through Amazon Prime Video. So, it could be that it's an even better platform for selling their services for SVOD providers. So That's the gist of the announcement, Will. You wrote about it. What do you think?
Yeah, first of all, I concur with everything you say, Colin. I think it makes great sense for Roku, and they're no doubt the place that tons and tons of people are turning to every night during prime time now to watch different services. So I think for Roku to leverage the Roku channel and try to essentially sell in these additional paid services is right on the money. And as you say, it helps them broaden out from the hardware business, which they've certainly been trying to do and doing well over the past couple of years. It deepens their relationship with the customer. It's, I think, a positive for the subscription services as well, because they want to be in front of people, in front of eyeballs as much as they can, in terms of broadening their subscriptions. And so that all works. And certainly from the consumer side, which we haven't talked about that much yet, just yet, but from the consumer side, this idea of sort of the one-click sign-up, the centralized billing to one credit card, the unified search, the free trials, Roku starting with over 25 subscription services, that'll no doubt expand in the future. That just takes friction out of the equation for the consumer. And this is a path that Amazon has obviously trod pretty well with Amazon Channels. So we know that it works. We've heard from lots of the different subscription services over the past several years since Amazon Channels launched how successful it's been for them. So I think Roku is right on the right track here. And certainly, as we think about sort of more broadly, this whole direct-to-consumer model that has received so much hype over these last few years, the idea of these content providers being able to go direct to consumer instead of going through the traditional multi-channel bundle. I think that DTC play is still going to have its place in the overall portfolio that content providers have in terms of how they go to market. But I think that we're going to see these third-party distribution deals, whether it's Amazon Channels, Roku, Apple, which started doing this with their TV app in 2018. Likely we'll see Google or slash YouTube in this space at some point this year. There's even been murmurs about Facebook getting into this, though I'm not sure how great a fit it is for them. But clearly, big platforms trying to leverage their benefits, their strength with the strength of their relationships with customers to be in the subscription video business. So I think it's only going to increase as we go forward in the year.
I do too. I as you say, I think there's lots of people who are going to jump into this game. But one of the things I really want to focus on, I want to draw our listeners' attentions to, is I think this is a really good opportunity for SVOD providers. And actually, Roku can provide something which until now Amazon hasn't been able to, although there are rumors it's going to, and that is this ad-supported free viewing model. And I think this is a tremendously strong way to increase the funnel of people that you reach that can be drawn into a subscription relationship. So I really hope some of these providers that are right now are stuck on the subscription model only really consider thinking about releasing some of their content supported by ads into the Roku channel itself so that people can get exposed to that content. And I think there are many, many benefits to that. One is you're going to earn revenue from people that would never subscribe to you because they'll actually watch your stuff free. And maybe for whatever reason, they're not going to subscribe to you. But the second reason is, casual viewing, I think, is watching ad supported is a bit more casual relationship with the content than the committed subscription. And so casual viewers being exposed to the content is a great way to get them interested in subscribing. When they find a show that they really like, they probably will want to watch it ad free and may well consider subscribing. So this idea of freemium, we've talked about it before on the podcast. I think this could be a watershed year for this approach. It's already being used here by the Roku channel, by other aggregation services like Verve from Elation. I got a feeling that we're going to see some ad-free ad-supported rather content from Amazon in the next few months here that will emulate that model too. And when you think about it, Will, this kind of gives you everything that you want, right? You've got free viewing, you've got the casual relationship, but you've also got your committed viewing, and you've got it integrated all into a very simple interface to pull it all together. So I think this, as you say, this approach has got a lot of legs, and we're going to see a lot of expansion of the approach, I think, in the coming year.
Yeah, actually speaking of Amazon, Colin, which you raised, when we did our top 10 stories for 2018, I had mentioned that I think one of the big ones is Amazon's move into advertising, and they reportedly did $2.5 billion in revenue, making them the number three player in Q3 after Google and Facebook, and that's only going to continue this year. And to your point, it's a nice place for them to be if they're pushing into advertising and then being able to turn around and offer some of these subscription services that either maybe want to do a freemium model, as you suggested, maybe offering some ad-supported tier first, or possibly a hybrid approach like we've seen from CBS All Access and from Hulu, that kind of a hybrid approach, if supported by Amazon as well, could also work really nicely. And that's certainly something that Roku is well positioned to do also. So I like the idea of these bigger platforms being in a position to support multiple business models for content providers, offering that type of flexibility, and really waiting to see what the consumers prefer and just providing that type of choice and flexibility and see ultimately which model maybe becomes the lead. The lead horse, and still enabling the other ones to play as well. So we'll see how all this unfolds, Colin, but it sure does seem like a pretty dynamic space going into 2019.
It does. It does. You bring up a good point, Will. Funnily enough, I wrote a report. Oh gosh, it must be 8 years ago, maybe even longer than that. I wrote a report which looked at how a television channel that decided to go all in online would be profitable, would get back to at least revenue neutral, but perhaps grow revenue. And in that model, I always assumed that they would be using all three of the main monetization mechanisms, that is ads, subscription, and pay-per-view. And those three things work pretty synergistically together in a service. So I really hope that we do see more use of other business models other than subscription going forward.
So the,
But yeah, go
I'm sorry.
ahead.
No, I was going to say earlier you said win for everyone. I was just going to highlight that there is one fly in the ointment here for the content providers that are getting pulled into these third-party distribution deals, which is that, of course, the promise of direct-to-consumer was you get to understand better what your viewer is doing, what they're watching. You get all the data, you control the relationship, etc. That was the big benefit versus the traditional multi-channel model. Now, as we go into the digital realm, if all that ends up happening is they're swapping out traditional distributors for newer distributors, platforms, the Amazons, Rokus, etc. of the world, it's not necessarily clear that they're benefiting themselves long term. And you do have to wonder just a little bit, where is all this going? In the short term, certainly it helps to expand their base of digital subscribers, but you do wonder a little bit what it means for being able to control their own destinies if now they're just falling in line behind the platforms. And by the way, I would say that is probably the likely scenario as we get further into 2019. It would not surprise me if by the end of the year, the majority of new subscribers to all of these, either premium cable networks or SVOD services, were not coming out of the big platform. So, with that world heading that way, you do sort of wonder, what's the ultimate long-term positioning of these companies? What do you think?
Well, you highlight something which it concerns me greatly about. I can tell you that when I talk to SVOD providers, and I talk to a lot of them, particularly the smaller ones. On the one hand, they absolutely love Amazon channels because some of them are saying that they're getting better than 50% of their subscribers through Amazon channels these days. But in the next breath, they're very critical because Amazon doesn't provide them data on the viewership of their content. They just don't provide them enough data for them to really be able to manage that service. But the second thing is that they really dilute the branding of the service itself. So if you go into Amazon and you look at what you get, you basically just get a ribbon with the content from that channel. And you have to rely on the integrated search that's provided on the Fire TV platform or whatever platform you're using. And the problem with that, of course, is it returns content from all the services, not just the service that is of interest to a consumer at that time. So this dilution of brand and the paucity of data, I think actually are great opportunities for Roku. If Roku can address those two issues in the experience that they're providing here through the Roku channel, then I think not only will providers, as SVOD providers come, they will love the platform in a way that they simply don't with Amazon channels. So I think there's a wonderful opportunity here for Roku to establish the Roku channel as the better place for these companies to do business. And I will tell you, Will, I was very surprised to see in the announcement that the only way that a consumer who has subscribed, say, to Showtime can watch the Showtime content through Roku channel is through the Roku app on devices and not through the Showtime's own app. If I was HBO, I would be leaning very, very hard on Roku to make those credentials work through the HBO Now app directly, because of course that fixes both of the problems that we've been talking about, namely the branding and the data issue. So I think there is an opportunity here for Roku to endear themselves greatly with the SVOD providers if they were to fix those problems that the providers point out with Amazon channels.
Yeah, so you raise it as an opportunity and then you very quickly turn around and say, but it looks like Roku is basically going to do the same playbook.
It certainly does.
So interesting. And by the way, HBO was not in that announcement from Roku. You just raised HBO and have to believe that they're a sought-after partner for Roku as well, and HBO itself is no doubt looking for as much distribution as it can as well.
Oh yeah, distribution is the name of the game for this year. There's no question for smaller services, Will. There's one other thing that I want us to remember here, and that is success is not guaranteed, that's for sure. I think that Roku is going to have to make some adjustments in its practices to do a good job in selling these services. So the first thing I would do is that they should be emulating what Amazon is doing with channels, and that is when you do a search on a movie, Amazon actively pushes to you the SVOD services that have that movie, as well as opportunities for pay-per-view and for purchase. They're going to have to do that. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, I just don't think there are enough advertising opportunities inside the interface. And I think they're going to have to change the Roku interface as well to make it more friendly to the sale of partner services. So I think those two things are going to be required if they're going to have the same level of success that Amazon has had with channels. Ironically, though, that actually makes Roku less neutral as a platform, because of course they're going to be favoring services that they partner with in the resale through the Roku channel. And that neutrality, I think, has been part of the success of Roku as a platform, because, you know, they have thousands of channels where Apple TV and Amazon Fire TV and other platforms only have tens or hundreds. So that's a huge difference, right? And becoming less neutral makes you less attractive as a platform. So there are some challenges there for Roku that they're going to have to manage pretty carefully if they're going to be a big success. But notwithstanding all of that, I think it is a probably a net good move for both Roku, for the SVOD providers, and for consumers.
Yeah, nothing comes without its little prickly pieces, Colin, but I agree with you. I think it's definitely the right move for Roku. Very interested to see how the implementation actually ends up working in within Roku channel. But I'm pretty bullish on it. And as I say, I think more broadly, we're going to see even more of this as we get into the new year. And we'll certainly keep an eye on it, right? Pretty dynamic space.
We certainly will, but I think we're just about out of time for our first podcast of the of 2019.
We are, and you are just about out of voice. So thanks for hanging in there, Colin, and thanks everybody for listening in on our first edition of our podcast of 2019. We wish everybody a happy new year, and we'll see you all again next week.